88 to 91.
Radio 2.
The Big Book of Pop, the World Encyclopedia of Rock and Roll, the entire internet. Throw them all out.
It don't contribute. It does nothing.
And replace them with the Blagger's Guide, radio's cut out and keep guide to the entire history of popular music.
Blagger's Guide. What time do you have?
In soundbite size 4.
Get on, minute. I'm on a double yellow.
Ladies and gentlemen, the greatest rock and roll band in the world. Welcome to the Blagger's Guide to the Rolling Stones. The Rolling Stones, the oldest running rock group in the world. Still rocking with three original founder members, making them one up on the Beatles, Status Quo, and Bananarama. They remain a huge live attraction so long as they don't do,
she confessed her love to me, then she vanished on the breeze,
anything off one of their new albums. The Rolling Stones. Name?
Blaggers. Fact.
After a Muddy Waters song,
I got a boy child coming, gonna be a Rolling Stone.
Were formed after two school friends, PE teacher's son Michael Jagger and close cousin of the devil, Keith Richards, met again on a train in Dartford, Kent. Mick noticed that Keith got an obscure blues album under his crusty shoulder and was impressed, as he too was an obscure blues fan. It was a conversation that changed rock forever. Look.
Excuse me, are you Keith?
Yeah.
I'm Mick Jagger. We were at infant school together.
I remember you. You were the creepy one who sang the hymns in the voice of Tina Turner.
Yeah, cool. I couldn't help noticing that you've got the new album by Muddy Waters there.
Yeah, he's great. Not like you. You're rubbish.
I love the blues.
Oh, really? Would you like a medal?
Yes. Although I'd prefer a knighthood.
Soon the two old pals were sharing a squalid flat in West London with their new friend, Brian Jones. Brian was famous for three things. He had lovely blonde hair like a Swedish Pekingese. He could play any instrument in the world just by looking at it. And,
Blagger's fact,
he had fathered five illegitimate children, all of whom he wanted to call Brian. Anyway, soon the Stones had formed, and after being given their first song, I Wanna Be Your Man,
I wanna be your lover, baby,
by their future rivals, the Beatles.
I wanna be your lover, baby. I wanna be your man.
The Beatles weren't always very generous about the Rolling Stones. John Lennon once said,
everything the Beatles did, the Stones did 6 months later.
Which is a bit cruel, if also a bit true. Impress the haters with this. The Beatles wrote, I Wanna Be Your Man. The Stones covered it. The Beatles went from singing about kissing to singing about trendy Chelsea types. The Stones, ditto. The Beatles did All You Need Is Love, which has the Stones on backing vocals. The Stones did We Love You, which has the Beatles on backing vocals. Let It Be, Let It Bleed. And worst of all, about 10 minutes after the Beatles released their psychedelic masterpiece, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, which had the Fabs on the cover dressed in colourful costumes, the Rolling Stones released Their Satanic Majesty's Request, a truly dreadful record which had the Stones on the cover dressed in colourful costumes. That must have strained relations between the bands.
Whoa, John, it's Gear coming to trendy clubs and getting away from the fans.
Yeah, it's Fab, isn't it, Ringo? Oh, no!
What?
It's the Rolling Stones. Quick, hide under the table.
Hello, lad, what are you doing?
We were looking for pennies under the table.
Cool. Can we look for pennies under the table?
No, get your own pennies.
Hey, I like your shoes, Ringo. Can you tell me the exact make, size and colour?
I've forgotten.
Who wants a drink?
I'll get them. Mick, Keith, what do you want?
What are you having, John?
For God's sake, I'm going home.
Can I come?
No. Can I?
I said it first, didn't I, John?
The Stones were the toast of London, only more crumbly. Soon they were massive, thanks in part to their top tunes. Their ridiculously named manager, Andrew Luke Oldham, and their image. The Beatles, you see, were perceived as altogether now lovable mop tops, whereas the Stones were seen as dangerous rebels. Tom Wolfe, the gay-suited astronaut groupie who wrote Bonfire of the Vanities, famously said,
"The Beatles want to hold your hand. The Rolling Stones want to burn down your town."
And ever since that stupid remark, rock has been divided into two camps. People who think Tom Wolfe is a knobstone, and Tom Wolfe. Anyway, the Stones could do no wrong until Altamont, when a man was murdered as the band sang Sympathy for the Devil, thus casting the Stones' bad person image forever. The Stones spent a quieter 1970s making one
Black as Fact
essential critics' album, Exile on Main Street. They embraced disco.
I've been holding out so long. I've been sleeping all alone.
And really, really bad reggae.
Baby, oh, cherry, oh, baby. You know I'm in love with you.
And that was it for the Stones, creatively. When they celebrated their 25th anniversary, Charlie Watts famously said it had been
5 years playing and 20 years hanging around.
In fact, this exclusive Blagger's Guide analysis reveals the Stones' career to have been more like this.
5 years play, 4 months in jail, 6 months making appalling films,
Mick Jagger only,
and 20 years taking drugs.
Like EastEnders and Martin Amis, the band had no more new ideas, but carried on anyway. The 80s even saw them make solo records. Of which the only good tune by any of them was, astonishingly,
Je suis un rockstar. Je suis un
CC's Je suis un rockstar by Bill Wyman. No one saw that coming. Charlie bred horses, Ron Wood gave up drinking several times, and Keith Richards became a proper rock legend. Although, as this parody of the numbskulls from the Dandy shows, not without cost to himself.
All right, fellow body parts of Keith Richard, report, please.
There's bad news from the liver, Chief. Completely short. Kidneys shrunk to the size of a mouse's eye. And it's the same story from heart, veins and teeth.
Oh, well. Any other business?
Brain here, boss. Sorry, a bit slow these days.
Blimey, I thought you were dead.
A bit worried, actually, Chief.
Oh, God. It's not drugs again, is it?
No, Chief. It's falling.
What?
For some reason, he keeps climbing things. First it was a ladder in his library, then he fell out of a pineapple tree, and now he's planted a magic beanstalk in his garden. He plans to climb it and steal a golden goose from the giant.
I knew it! It is drugs!
Got any heroin?
So, what was and is the point of the Rolling Stones? Well, they've influenced millions of bands. Introduced the blues into the rock mainstream, and back in the day, they were very rude. And we all like Keith, and Charlie's a proper gent. The end.
Once this was a happy place.
Then they moved in.
Crispy and they're still weak. They're out the sight before Keith.
They're Angel's Holland's Hootin' Annie.
The Wainwright family.
Loved is the father. The mummy's name is Kate. The daughter's known as Martha. And Rufus thinks he's great.
I am great.
Clever and they're smarmy. They're a sick acoustic army. The Wainwright family.
They
Coming soon to an overpriced coffee shop near you.
It's hello from I, and it's hello from I. Welcome to the Blagger's Guide to Reggae.
Cocaine running around my brain. I've got cocaine running around my brain.
Shall we stop pranking? Uptown, stop pranking.
Prostitution, Conway. Hey, hey, hey.
Reggae was invented in the late 1960s by drugs. No, really, because in the old days there was blue beat and there was ska.
The chicken. Huh. Huh.
Which gradually developed into the calmer rock steady. And then, as dope replaced beer as the drug of choice among musicians, slowed down even more. And then, just when you thought it couldn't get any more spaced out, turn the record over, it's dub. You see, for some people, reggae is weedy rubbish played in Jamaican hotel bars. But for others, it's radical, political, and futuristical. Impress a racist or Morrissey by telling them that...
Blagger's fact.
The most influential form of music from the last 30 years, sonically, technically, and conceptually, is dub reggae. Most famously, in the hands of...
Yes, me is Lee Perry, you know. Sonically, technically, conceptually. Yes, me have a fish. Me buy the fish from Tesco this morning. It is a Lee Perry fish, because me is Lee Perry.
Lee Scratch Perry.
Hello, good evening, and yeah, I read Babylon. This week, the South Bank Show comes to you from the Blackhawk Studios in Jamaica, as we spend a day with Lee Scratch Perry, the most important figure in modern music. Lee, thanks for inviting us here.
With you in a minute, Melville. We just have to shave this baboon.
No problem. Now, Lee, you first worked with the Upsetters in...
2 seconds, Melville. I have to worship a banana. Oh, banana, I love you, I love you, I love you. You are the king of all yellow fruits in the world.
All right.
You.
Can I just ask you how you got the bass sound on the roast fish and...
I'm nearly ready. Just got to set fire to the contents of my own studio. Perry step outside. Then Lee Perry close the door. And then Lee Perry lock it.
Lee? Lee? Oh, God. It's Ken Russell all over again.
Lee Perry, the single most important figure in the history of reggae.
What about Bob Marley?
Be quiet. Lee Perry, working from his Black Ark studio, essentially a cross between a tin shack and the TARDIS, took the basics of dub, which were huge booming bass lines, weird echoey bits of guitar and vocal, and the Jamaican art of toasting, which was like rap only 20 years earlier, Mr. Snoop Donkey, and transformed them into... the future.
You can't take this car no more. It needs a new carburetor. It needs a new alternator. It needs a new radiator. Damn! This car, all! The whole past me!
And then, when things got too weird, Perry did the sensible thing. Burned his own studio to the ground and...
black as fat.
Moved to Switzerland. But not before he produced one of the greatest punk records of all time. Complete Control by The Clash there, produced by Lee Perry. That must have been a meeting and a half. I wish I had an archive audio tape. Oh, hang on. I do.
So, we want you, Mr. Scratch Perry, to produce us because you're great.
Why, I'd be delighted. I've always welcome a challenge.
I didn't know you talked like that, Mr. Perry.
I don't. This is a sketch.
So, you'll produce our new single?
But of course. I love love the Sex Pistols.
Yes, strange but true. The last bit, anyway. Even now, if you play him Complete Control by The Clash, which contains several lines referring to the fact that this is a record by The Clash, and The Clash mentioned themselves several times, Lee Perry still believes to this day that he produced The Sex Pistols. But enough about Lee Perry. There are many other things that are great about reggae.
What about Bob Marley?
Drop it. One of the appealing factors was the sheer differentness of reggae. With lyrics that were half Jamaican slang and half references to Rastafarianism, much reggae was incomprehensible to rock fans raised on the glib tunes of Pink Floyd. Have a go of this, for example.
Yes, yeah, youth.
Aye.
The eye decide to move it dirty, Harry.
Aye, but watch a man. When's the gun, I man forward up a carry. And I man sight one eye. Sure, that one a rain can dirty, I tell you.
Big Youth's phenomenally good Screaming Target, whose intro took me 20 years to translate. Basically, all Big Youth and his mate Little Youth are saying is this.
Hello, what have you been up to?
I've just been to see the new Clint Eastwood film, Dirty Harry. It really is very good.
And then it all just goes mental.
Ah! No, no, no.
What do you say, no? Well, I say, yeah. Because you should never say no.
Nice. But reggae did break into the commercial sector in the mid-1970s. Thanks to one man, the world's first third world superstar. His dad wasn't a British Army captain, and nor was his mother. His name is...
Bob Marley.
Yes, it is. Nestor Robert Marley, whose best songs...
One love, one heart, let's get together and feel all right.
We're all done better in the 60s. By Bob Marley. And now, reggae continues to evolve in stranger and stranger directions. In the 80s, it became dancehall. And in the 21st century, it has embraced rap and mutated into the highly popular reggaeton. But, as an old-school reggae fan, there's only one artist for me. Spiritual, brilliant voice, great songs, it's gotta be...
Bob Marley.
Burning Spear. Real name, Winston Rodney.
My brother goes to the river. Carry the water. The water.
You know, if he doesn't want it...
My sister wash up the dishes.
I'd like to be called Winston Rodney.
WHS presents the new album from That Woman You Like. Featuring the classic,
a song about a boyfriend.
The new album from That Woman You Like is a must-buy this summer. Featuring not only
a song about her boyfriend,
but also
a song dedicated to a cat.
Recorded live on Later with Jules Holland. So why not pop down the supermarket, grab a bottle of Chardonnay and a box of chocolates, and whilst you're there, grab a copy of the new album from
That Woman You Like.
Hey, Birchill, can I get help with my car insurance?
I don't know. I'm Julie Birchill, not a nodding dog.
Oh, well. Hey, Birchill, do you know where I can get the new book by your ex-husband, Tony Parsons? I hear it's all about the NME.
Oh, no.
Are you going to read it, Birchill?
No, 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 no. No, 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 no.
Birchill Car Insurance. We don't do car insurance and we don't read books by Tony Parsons.
Yeah, I'm David Quantic. David Quantic. I'm sure I'm on the list.
Sorry, you can't come in because you're not dressed like a pump.
In that case, welcome to the Blagger's Guide to New Romantics.
Please, please tell me now.
Satisfaction.
neo-romantics, a welcome touch of glamour in a drab post-punk pop scene, or a bunch of big girls' blouses wearing small girls' blouses? Yes! New romantics were invented...
So, you just add a little dash of olive oil, yes? And then you've got a blag as fat.
By the Welsh. By one Welshman in particular, sturdy son of Cymru, Steve Strange, who was the doorman at the Blitz Club and wouldn't let anyone in unless they looked like a twit. Here now, from an old edition of BBC Two's Let Youth Speak Up, is a slice of Verite film from them days.
Hello, how can I help you?
I'm Barry. I'd like to go to your disco. And this is my wife, Alison.
Hello, we're from Chigwell.
You can't come in. You don't look stupid enough.
Oh.
But we're from Chigwell.
Yeah, Chigwell.
I don't care. I've turned away thousands. In fact, there's only me and the DJ in there most nights. And I threw him out last night for wearing normal trousers.
But you're wearing normal trousers.
Oh, crikey. You're right. Here, look after the door while I throw myself out.
Ryan and Ronnie there. Soon, thousands had cottoned on and were dressing like knobstones on a daily basis. Magazines like The Face, Blitz and the hilarious New Sounds, New Styles devoted themselves to covering the new scene. But what to call it? Because, first off, new romanticism was known as...
Laggers.
The cult with no name.
Fact.
Clever, eh? But that meant they ran the risk of Clint Eastwood going up to a DJ and asking for a single by America, which would be the man with no name asking for a horse with no name at the cult with no name. Yeah, that was likely, wasn't it? So, anyway, another name new romanticism had was this.
Laggers fact.
Peacock punk. Excuse me, I have to put on the laughing policeman for a second. That's better. Peacock punk didn't catch on, A, because it was appalling, and B, because some peacocks who were into punk found out and chain-whipped Robert Elms. No, they didn't. Robert Elms, though, did, however, briefly manage Spandau Ballet.
You've got the power to know you're in this circle. Always believe it.
They were the first new romantic band. They wore kilts and did gigs on battleships. Hang on, read that back to me.
They wore kilts and did gigs on battleships.
You don't get that with Sandy Tom, do you? Anyway, Spandau Ballet contained two brothers, Gary Kemp, who wrote the songs, and Martin Kemp, who smiled and was later in EastEnders. He played Peggy Mitchell. The sax player was Steve Norman, who once...
He got a blood as fat!
...locked himself into his trousers. And the singer was Tony Hadley, who sang like a lonely goose in search of love. But they had hits. And they had rivals. Yes, the Midlands Montacutes to Spandau's Cockney Capulets were, of course... Duran Duran. Named...
Laggers Fact.
After an old Irish pervert in a film. Duran Duran were John Taylor, Roger Taylor, Andy Taylor, Nick Taylor and Simon Le Taylor. And early on, they were joined by none other than Stephen Duffy, who left because the band weren't weird enough. But soon the charts were full of new romantics, like in some ways the eggs of David Bowie left on the seabed to be fertilised by... some disco fish. New romanticism paved the way for other acts. Old losers got a new lease of life. There was Japan, who had been sort of the car boot sale of Roxy music. And suddenly were sort of the gay talking heads. Landscape, who had been Baldy Jazzmen, and then they became Baldy Space Jazzmen.
Einstein and Go-Go. Einstein and Go-Go.
There was Shona Dancing, who later became Ricky Gervais.
Thousand tortured lives have fallen, wounded dying, cut down by the...
And then, weirdly, there was Stephen Duffy, who as Tintin had a new romantic hit. Then, of course, there was the greatest new romantic of them all, the People's Princess. Her Royal Highness Diana, Princess of Wales. She was the poshest Gerani in the world, as this famous moment from Martin Bashir's docu-so-called Mentory shows.
So, Your Royal Highness, what sort of music do you like?
I like Duran Duran. I think they're fab.
Really? I'd have had you down as a Thompson Twins fan.
No, bog off. I love the Duran. Union of the Snake, that was ace. Hungry Like the Wolf, it's the bomb. Big up the girls on film massive, yeah?
All right. Who's best? Arcadia or the Power Station?
They're both sh-
And so we must leave New Romanticism, as its fans did. They moved on, got jobs, grew up, married the backing singers out of Wham, and some of them ended up writing songs for Robbie Williams. Which is neither new nor romantic. Good night!
The Blaggers Guide was written by David Quantock and Simon Poole, yeah? The script editor was Steve Punt. It was produced by Simon Poole. Additional production was by Tom Brignall. Voices by Simon Poole, Lewis McLeod and Kate O'Sullivan.
And hola, honabule.
The Blaggers Guide was a unique production for BBC Radio 2, yes? Well, put it in the bin then!